Good Friday, and welcome to the 305 Panther Podcast. I am your co-host, Louis Agudelo, with my co-host,
Jake Spiewak. What's going down, everybody? Happy Friday. Good Friday, apparently.
Big holiday for the Christian Catholic community.
I thought it was only Catholic. Is it Christian, too?
Well, that's another story.
I don't know. I'm Jewish, so I don't really know.
All right, so...
Passover, yeah. Passover is, like, today or coming up or something.
So. It is Friday.
Happy Pesach.
It is Friday, the 3rd of April, 2015, and we got a lot to talk about here today. We got the Miami Heat loss last night. We've got a lot of FIU baseball, softball, football. We've got the Panthers still fighting for a playoff spot, opening day this weekend, and the Final Four. We got a lot to cover. We're going to start here with the Heat loss to the Cavs last night, 114-88. Jake, what are your thoughts?
You know, my thoughts are as they've been really for this whole season. I mean, that the Miami, especially as of late, that the Heat just don't have what it takes to beat the Cavaliers. And if the Heat are able to hold on to the 7th seed, they would be playing the Cavaliers in the playoffs. And so our guys, Santiago Archieri, David Drucker, the co-hosts on Panther Sports Talk Live, they're all, oh yeah, the Heat can do it. The Heat can upset the Cavaliers. But in reality, it's just the Cavaliers are a far superior team. You can blame that on injuries, you can blame that on whatever, but truth be told, I'd still take the Cavaliers in 5 or 6 games over a fully healthy Miami Heat team. I think that when you look at it, LeBron James is obviously a difference maker. He's the best player on the planet. And guys like Kyrie Irving, Kevin Love, there's so much depth on the Cavaliers team, and that's something the Heat don't have. Even if the Heat were healthier than they are now, they still don't have that type of depth. You're relying on guys like Henry Walker and Hassan Whiteside to really carry this team, especially since Dwayne Wade went down. And it's just not something that I think will be able to take any team in the playoffs, much less the Cleveland Cavaliers, who, unless the Heat drop to the 8th seed, that's who they'll be, or drop out of the playoffs completely. The Cavs are who they'd be playing in the playoffs in the first round.
I mean, I disagree. I don't think that without injuries, the Heat would be that much inferior, that far inferior. I mean, with Chris Bosh and McRobertson, that's two big bodies.
You wouldn't have Whiteside.
I mean, well, that's... I guess you could say that.
I'd take Whiteside over McBob. And, you know, I mean...
Well, the thing is that McRoberts is a better offensive player. He's far superior. Come on, he might not be the rebounding threat or the defensive player that Whiteside is, but he can shoot.
He can shoot, yeah, but Whiteside, he's developed that hook shot that he learned from Juwan Howard. He's out
there... That's not consistent.
Like, he almost averages a double-double. He's putting out... He's one of the Heat's leading scorers every day. I don't think... If you look at Josh McRoberts' career stats, he averages like 7 points a game in his career. He's not that great of a player.
Yeah, but that's the role.
He's one of the overhyped additions that the Heat had. They think that all of a sudden this guy, this long-haired dude from wherever he was before, who's been an NBA journeyman, he's been like a backup quarterback his whole career. He's like Josh McCown when the Tampa Bay Bucks thought that he was going to be some guy to come in and save their organization. McBob is a guy who's not that great of a player. He's somebody who would have come in, I think, a little overhyped and not been able to really work into his role that the Heat wanted. So I think that him going down, while it's obviously terrible to say, I think that his injury, that which eventually led to the signing of Whiteside, because of just how many players went down for the Heat and they needed a big man, I think that that helped. I think Whiteside is a lot more consistent because he has so many double-doubles. He's consistently one of the Heat's leading scorers. And he's been one of the only guys in the box score that really lead this team every night aside from Wade.
Well, yeah, but if this makes sense, he's a difference maker, but he's not a difference maker. You know what I mean? He gets the numbers, but
he's more of a difference maker than Josh McRoberts.
What is
Josh McRoberts doing?
He's
a glorified Josh Smith with a man bun.
Okay, so you're saying that with Chris Bosh and not Josh McRoberts, the Heat couldn't take the game or take the series to maybe 7 games?
7 games, no. I don't think there's anybody on the Heat team that can turn it up in a playoff series aside from Dwayne Wade. You know, Chris Bosh, I think he'd be able to contribute, but nobody more than LeBron. I mean, LeBron would take over. LeBron James, as has recently come out due to my guy Brian Windhorst, who I one of my least respected people in sports. But
wow.
He actually broke the story, or lack there, whatever this is, that David Blatt doesn't really coach the Cavaliers. It's just LeBron James calling plays and David Blatt pretends
now,
to coach.
Now, hold on. Let's not harp too much on this, but the criticisms that Miami fans are making that I've seen are the same exact, if not similar, criticisms that the rest of the nation was making about the Heat. Blatt's not coaching the Heat, neither was Spo. LeBron's the coach, both teams. Like, it's the same thing.
No, I agree, but LeBron really is the coach. I mean, especially if that's true. I don't think it ever came out that Spoelstra was just pretending to coach. That may be
But that's specific. You can't... Of course they didn't come out I heard a point, an argument was made last night. But it was never said that LeBron called all the plays and then the coach mimicked him. And of course not. It's a very specific reference to make. Now, it was said that LeBron was calling the plays and making the decisions. But so what?
I'm saying LeBron James, he's the coach of that team. He's the star player. He can guard anybody on the Heat. He can shut down, Goran Dragic, but he can shut down Wade. He can shut down Bosh, and it's like, he can shut down anybody on the floor for the Heat. And plus you add in Kyrie Irving, who's a much better point guard than Goran Dragic. You add in the fact that they have Kevin Love, who, according to your Josh McRoberts argument, he's a glorified Josh McRoberts. He's much better than him. He's a big man who can shoot. Averages more than 6 points a game in his career. So, I just think that you look at that and then you add in the shooters they have on the bench. They have guys like Mike Miller who can contribute in the playoffs. You can have guys like James Jones. You have J.R. Smith, who's one of the most underrated players, regardless of what you think about. And that guy is a dead-eye shooter. Iman Shumpert, Kendrick Perkins, who was a starting center in the NBA, who's better than Birdman, I'd say. And so the roster is not comparable to the Cavaliers. I don't care if they're fully healthy. It's just you can't compare the two rosters because the Cavs are just far superior when it comes to talent and depth.
I mean, no, you're right. You're definitely right. The Cavs are a superior team. I just don't know if it would be that far-fetched for the Heat to take it to 6 or 7 games with a healthy Chris Bosh. Because there'd be more chemistry. I mean, come on,
that guy's... I could see them
taking it to 6 games. That's what I'm saying. I'm not saying that he would win the series. I mean, the key is that they don't have LeBron James. That's going to trump most teams, is if you don't have LeBron James and the other team does, guess what? The greatest player on the planet's going to win out. He's going to find a way, especially as we've seen over the years. The basketball IQ on him, the way he knows how to really lock in late moments and take over. But I just feel as though the argument that the Heat are just far and super inferior to the Cavs isn't accurate once the entire team is healthy. Granted, everybody gets hurt throughout the season. Every team has injury problems. I just think, I guess it's just not a point to be made, but I just don't think that the Heat would be that much of a long shot to at least push the series to 6 or 7.
The thing is, the only argument I could see is if the Heat were fully healthy with Bosh, they probably wouldn't have the 7 seed. They might be able to pull ahead of Milwaukee, who, for some reason, traded away Brandon Knight and really ruined that team. I think that eventually, if the Heat think that they could have made some big run with Bosh healthy, then you'd end up playing the Cavaliers at some point. And so you could say, the Heat would be in a higher seed. They'd have a better chance to move forward and continue in the playoffs. But you can't hide from the Cavs. They're the best team in the Eastern Conference. You can't hide from the Hawks, who are a very complete team. You can't hide from the Bulls, who I never think are all that great. I think that they're kind of overhyped, but they keep winning. And so say what you want about the East. It's very top-heavy. But if the Heat were healthy, they'd probably be like a 4 seed, I think. I think that's fair.
Absolutely.
And so say they're a 4 seed, but then they're playing a 5 seed who would be the Raptors? They'd be a 5 seed playing probably the Raptors. So that would be maybe a fully healthy Heat team could beat the Raptors. But eventually then you have to start playing teams like Atlanta, Cleveland, Chicago. And that's when the Heat, I don't care how healthy they are, they just don't have the depth anymore to do that. And they don't have a player like LeBron. I mean, Wade is great when he's healthy. And obviously he just bruised his knee last night and left for the whole game. But, I mean, at the end of the day, the Heat, I don't think, regardless of how healthy they are, without LeBron, this roster is not built to win a significant amount this year.
As a 5th seed, I believe they would be playing the Raptors.
As a 5, if they moved in as a 5, they'd be playing the Bulls.
They're playing the Bulls. Okay, I'm sorry.
There's a first round exit.
Moving off that, the Heat have 7 games left, 4 at home. They're playing Detroit, Indiana, Charlotte, Chicago, Toronto, Orlando, and Philly to finish the season. They're in the 8th seed right now. They're going to have to fight a little bit. They have the edge over Boston as they're tied for the 8th seed because head-to-head, the Heat won more games. The rest of the games are against teams that seem to all be under 500, so the Heat shouldn't have too tough of a time.
Well, the Heat are under 500. You mean their schedule. Okay.
Yeah.
Don't they have one game against a tough opponent? I think they have one left. I don't remember who it is, but they have one tough game.
I mean, Detroit's not terrible, and Indiana's not terrible. It's Chicago must be probably the toughest game. Chicago and Toronto would be the toughest games. But let's move on to the Florida Panthers.
Of course.
Our friends in Sunrise. Aaron Ekblad out for the rest of the season, as we all know. Had to get season-ending surgery. But they did win last night 6-1. Still fighting for a playoff spot, I do believe.
They are, I mean, it's very unlikely because of they dropped the game to the Bruins earlier in the week. And that kind of ended all realistic hope. They'd need a lot to happen. They do have one game left against the Bruins on their schedule. Both teams have four games remaining. Lewis, you better be going to one of those games. They're all at home, and there's 6 points between them and the Bruins, so it's probably not going to happen. It's been a great story to see what the Panthers have been able to accomplish. This is a team that not a lot of people expected to do great, and really not a lot of people in South Florida cared about. I'm writing a column for the Beacon right now about how this season kind of went unnoticed by
the
masses.
Pick up your copy of
the
Beacon.
Of course, yep, just come on campus, pick it up. But
3 times a week.
You know what I mean?
Monday, Wednesday, Friday.
The game yesterday, as I'm sure I was the only one watching, was it was really nice to see this. It was a team out there who was having fun. They realized that they probably weren't going to be in the playoffs, but, you know, they rallied together. Luongo was about, like, a minute away from a shutout. They ended up firing some shots at him on a power play at the end, so the Hurricanes did end up scoring one. You know, the Panthers were up 6-0. It's Luongo's 400th career win. Yamir Yager. Yager, I hardly know her. You know,
come on, man.
You know, dude,
that's my job.
That's not your job, dude. But anyway, Yamir Yager, he had a goal. I think he had an assist as well. But just every line for the Panthers was just looking fantastic. And you know, it was just great to see the team rally together like that and just have a game that they needed to win if they still want to be in the playoffs. But regardless of that, it was a game where, coming off such a heartbreaking loss to the Bruins, they still were able to rally together and get this win. So it was fantastic to see that from the Panthers, with Luongo being the first star of the game, Yager being the second star, and Trocheck being the third star. So it was just great to see this team rally together. Like I've said 10 times now, and it was fantastic.
So pretty much lost season from what it seems.
A lot needs to happen, yeah. Yeah, I wouldn't say lost season, just because that would kind of that would just take away from what they've done. This isn't a lost season because they've made so many strides, and this is a team that they have a lot of young talent. They'll probably try to lock up Yager because he's shown that he still has a lot in the tank at this point. I mean, he said he's still got a bunch of years left in him, and so the Panthers, they should have a contract in the books right as you're able to start re-signing players. Because, I mean, Yager's a guy who he's shown that he's a leader on this team, and he's also one of the more talented players in this team, despite his age. And they've signed a lot of good rookies, one from Minnesota, one from Boston College, I want to say. So, you know, they're getting this amateur talent, and they're kind of building up their farm. So they're going to have a lot of guys, whether it's coming from the AHL or other leagues, they're going to have guys come up, start making their NHL debuts. And I think next year is kind of where you look at the Panthers to have a breakout season. And hopefully more people start heading up to Sunrise, more people start turning off Fox Sports Florida, because this is an entertaining team to watch. And it's a team that's only going to keep rising up. I think this season was just the beginning where they kind of established what they have and all their talent. And then next year is really where I start to see it get placed together.
Luongo, by the way, Roberto Luongo, the Panthers goalie, had his 400th game last night.
His 400th win, yeah, I mentioned that.
400th win, yep.
And you weren't paying attention. Like, you never pay attention to the Panthers.
I mean, I'm just trying to cover other stuff right now. I'm trying to get this podcast together, you know. It's a tough thing to do sometimes.
No, I understand. But, you know,
you're patronizing me.
But, you know, I mean, it was, Luongo did have his 400th win. Luongo has
had a really Stu Gotts moment right there. I just kind of zoned out. Fantastic.
All right. Well, look, when it comes to hockey, I have to be the Dan Levitard of this show. I have to be the one who starts to pull things together.
I mean, I want to get into hockey myself.
Then watch the games. You tweeted me yesterday while I was watching. I was tweeting about the Panthers game because I am a student journalist here in South Florida.
As I was
tweeting about the game, and you said, why are you watching this game?
Over the Heat game.
Over the Heat, yes.
Over a huge playoff-implicated game.
Okay, if the Panthers lost this game, they would be officially eliminated from the playoffs. So was this not important, Lewis?
Yes, but the thing is that the Panthers aren't sitting in a playoff spot right now. The Heat are sitting in a spot.
Okay, exactly. The Panthers have more stairs to climb. So if anything, this game should have had...
They're playing hockey. There is not a single stair on that that ice.
Stop it. They have more steps to climb in order to reach the playoffs. And the Heat are a joke at this point in the season.
So hot take. All right.
The Panthers are a team on the rise. The Heat are a team on the decline.
Hot take.
So there you go.
All right. Well, we're going to have to...
Quote me on it.
We're going to take a break after that, on that note, and we'll be right back to you on the 305 Panther Podcast.
man really freak out, see you out and freak out, see each and every freak out, don't freak out, don't freak out.
Welcome back to the 305 Panther Podcast. Co-host Lou Sagadello here with Jake Spiewak. You can follow us on Twitter at FILU, that's F_I_Lou, and at Beats by Dr. Spee. So
yes,
we're going to start this off talking FIU Pro Day, as all the colleges had their Pro Days for football. So that anybody who didn't really get invited to the Combine or didn't have a great Combine showing
Everybody has a Pro Day. Like Jameis Winston, everybody
has That's what I'm saying. But the purpose of the Pro Day is, from what it seems to me, is to make up for any sort of mistakes or not getting invited to the Combine, to show pro teams what you can do and take a last shot at getting drafted or getting signed. And FIU held its Pro Day this week. Jake, take it from here.
All right. Well, the players who were there were obviously the seniors who have graduated and are attempting at least to go pro and get drafted or at least sign on to a team after being undrafted. So, some of the players who were there, Glenn Coleman, obviously the deep threat last year, who was the team's best true receiver. I mean, obviously Jonnu Smith was the best pass catcher, but Glenn Coleman lined up as a receiver. He had a lot of those deep catches. He was the best weapon at wide receiver. David Delsoing, Giovanni Francois, the nephew of Mike Tomlin, the coach of the Steelers, who was tearing things up last season, especially in the big win against Middle Tennessee. He was on a tear. Justin Halley, who ran a great 40 from what I saw, Randy Harvey, Yosef Kuroi, DeMarcus Perkins, Byron Pinkston, not related to Jesse Pinkman, Delmar Taylor, and Corey White.
Why would he be related to Jesse Pinkman?
The name sounded similar.
That does not make that work.
You know, when I was younger, I thought the guys with the same first name may have been related. It's like there were these two guys I know named Ian, they were both in the band Deep Purple, and I thought that they were brothers, but...
It all depends on what culture you live in, because that's how that works in some countries.
Yeah, but this was in America.
America's not a country, Jake. America is three different continents. Anyways...
Three different continents?
Yes, North America, South America, Central America.
Central America is not a continent.
It's just left
when I learned when I was in when elementary school learning a little continent dance and song, there was not a place for Central America. Central America is an extension of South America.
It's an extension of North America, actually.
It's in between. There's some South America, some North America.
I don't think we have like a point that we're arguing on. I think we're just both, whatever.
This isn't even sports. This is just taking away from the fact that you don't know anything about the Pro Day.
Fantastic. Anyhow, let's talk about practices, because as you are the beat writer for football...
That's not confirmed yet.
I believe you to be. What information do you have on practices so far? There have been seven, I believe, correct?
I believe seven, yeah, with another one happening, an open practice actually happening tonight, starts 6:45 p.m. Things have been looking very good, or at least I haven't been able to be in there because they're supposedly closed. Still a lot of confusion about that, but... because some fans have been in, some fans haven't. Our boy David Drucker apparently was in and asked, but I don't know. But anyway, the practices, from what I've been reading, Pete Pellegrin of FIUSports.com has done a fantastic job of kind of recapping all the practices, and from the looks of it, things have been going very well. Some of the guys you really wanted to watch, as like Alex Magoo, seeing how he'll be able to improve so he can keep the starting job for his sophomore year, he's apparently looked very good. He's been threading the needle on a lot of passes, working on his deep throws, and so he's been looking great according to, at least according to what's been said. Anthony Jones, the freshman standout, he apparently has been running reverses, shaking defenders left and right with his spin moves, jukes. I mean, this guy, he can line up basically anywhere on the field, and so he's apparently living up to the hype that was surrounding him, a guy who was looked at by the University of Miami as well as some SEC schools. So Anthony Jones, one of the best talents I think FIU has landed. Maybe the best since T.Y. Hilton came here. I'd go as far to say that. Maybe Richard Leonard. But I mean, aside from that, Anthony Jones, I think, is going to be one of the best players on this team. I mean, obviously, the aforementioned Leonard, his leadership is obviously going to be a key role, especially in developing some of the younger cornerbacks, guys who may be in line to take the starting job, aside Jeremiah McKinnon, after Leonard leaves, if McKinnon's still there after Leonard leaves. So, you know, I mean, it's been great to see the defenses had some great stands, according to Pete. And also, like I said, the offense, guys like Jones and Magoo, as well as Alex Gardner, coming off the season-ending shoulder injury last year, he's apparently, he hasn't lost a step. He's he's apparently been catching a lot of passes. I say apparently because I haven't witnessed this yet. I'll be there tonight at the open practice, so I can get a first-hand look. But, you know, Gardner, he hasn't shown signs of stopping. I mean, he's a guy who had a lot of speed. And, he was a great runner last year, and so all signs point to him having a successful 2015 season.
To stay on FIU, we're going to talk a little bit about baseball here.
Wow, where was the transition? I thought you were going to throw something in about football or something, man.
Well, we got to cover a lot of stuff here today, man.
No opinion there from Luis Aguidello.
I mean,
you've been to more FIU football games than FIU baseball games. You're not even going to throw in a little opinion there? What's your take on Alex Magoo? What's your take on the quarterback battle?
Same thing I've been saying every time he comes up. He's an all right quarterback. He's got a lot of room for improvement. And to keep that job, he's going to have to improve a little bit more because from what it seems, how they've been recruited, Christian Alexander and
Maurice Alexander
have both been recruited and were rated as high as he was. Both, I believe, what were they, 2 or 3 stars?
It varied between different publications. I think around 3.
They were both ranked by the ESPN polls 73, 74. Magoo was the 72, 73 when he came out of high school. Not much of a difference from the guys that know what they're talking about, as it seems. So, I mean, optimistic for Magoo to get better is what I am, and hopefully he can make up for any sort of mistakes he made last year, but we'll just have to see. But, as I just tried doing, and I was stopped, we're going to talk a little bit of FIU baseball. They take on UTSA this weekend, 3-game set. This team is 5-4 in conference, as is UTSA, and with 21 Conference USA games, baseball's gotta win a lot of those. Gotta win the better half of them, as the team overall is 13-16 and is middle of the pack in Conference USA right now, lower middle of the pack. A team that was expected to finish out second is not looking too close to second at all.
They're below 500, aren't they?
Yes, they are. 13-16 is below 500. Their pitching isn't too bad. Chris Morrell's 5-2. He's taking the Sunday game. Cody Krause taking the Friday game. He's 3-2. And Andres Nunez pitching on Saturday with a 2.65 ERA and 33 strikeouts. He is, from what it seems, the best of the pitchers that FIU has as far as strikeouts and ERA goes, at least out of starting pitchers. Chris Morrell, though, has the most wins. It seems as though the team plays very well behind him, a lot of good defense. Danny DePico, the relief pitcher for the Panthers, has 34 strikeouts and 13 appearances. He is absolutely shutting people down. He's not a joke. Ever since we saw him against Tennessee, he's a very energetic kid, really knows how to come in and just throw the lights out, really, for a lack of a better phrase, a better term.
Throw the lights out?
Throw the lights out.
It's like how do you throw out a light? Do you just, like, take the light bulb
and
throw
it? It's like shooting the lights out. It's just baseball style. I just made a new term. Coin it. That's it. Throw the lights out. They've got a problem hitting right now. Their best hitter's only hitting, I believe, 321. So it's not like anybody's really standing out and really taking over. But a good amount of consistency. They just got to win more games and play well late. They play pretty well at home, 8-6. 3-6 on the road. Not a great away mark. But a lot of hopefulness for the Panthers going forward. On the other end of the baseball-softball spectrum at FIU, softball is doing amazing compared to baseball. 23-16 so far. They got a doubleheader tonight against UAB. These two were the Conference USA favorites going into the season. UAB is 23-9. They haven't played as many games as FIU yet. They're 8-1 at home, but only 3-4 away. So you got to imagine they're going to have some trouble on the road tonight against FIU. And they played last night, actually. UAB came out to a good start, put on 2 runs in the first inning, 2 runs in the second inning, 3 runs in the third, and then FIU came out and blasted just 9 runs, another run in the fourth, 6 in the fifth, to finish the game 16-9. And 16-10, yeah, 16-9, great showing by FIU. Any thoughts on FIU softball?
I hope that they continue to play at the high level they've been playing at. Because on the other side of the baseball-softball spectrum, as you said, they've been the team that's obviously been much better. They've got a series against UAB, who I believe you said was one of the favorites to win Conference USA. And, you know, two good teams going at it, so should be very interesting to see. I mean, it should be an entertaining series. That's for sure.
I mean, they got Stephanie Teixeira, who's batting .442 right now with
no
seven
relation
home runs.
To Mark Teixeira.
That one makes more sense. That one's better, but I mean, the way she's hitting, you might think differently. She's batting .442 with seven home runs.
No, that shows why there's no relation. Mark Teixeira hasn't been good for like 7 years.
But he was good at one point. That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
Fantastic contribution by you. Fantastic. Absolutely.
He
great.
Was at one. What am I supposed to say to that? I don't know. So were a lot of people.
So were a lot of people. But he was an MLB player at one point, and I believe still
so
is.
So were a lot of people.
No. This is fantastic contribution from Jake.
Sand Volleyball is currently playing on South Beach right now in an invitational. There's a contribution. Were you going to talk about Sand Volleyball, arguably the second most successful program at this school? No. So there's the contribution to the 305 Panther podcast, emphasis on the Panthers. The Lady Panthers Sand Volleyball team is playing on South Beach. You can keep up with them by adding FIU Athletics on Snapchat, and you can see what's going down there.
We're going to take a break here from the 305 Panther
great contribution,
podcast.
Lewis.
And we're going to talk a lot about national stories coming back. We're going to talk about opening day and, of course, the Final Four. Big deal here in this country.
Sand Volleyball against rival FAU tomorrow, 10:30 a.m. Well, on Saturday, if this is up on Friday. Then, yeah, tomorrow, 10:30. Go support the Lady Panthers.
We'll be back.
Yeah. Welcome back to the 305 Panther Podcast. Yeah. I'm Jake Spiewacker with my boy Louis Agudelo. Finishing off the podcast today, we will be talking about, personally, my favorite sport, which is baseball, because opening day is right around the corner. Sunday night is opening night. We'll see the Cubs play the Cardinals. Go Cardinals. And then on Monday is when opening day around for every team takes place. For my White Sox, for everybody else's Marlins, it's a great time of year. Spring training is finally wrapping up, and there will be finally baseball games that matter. So, I mean, I personally can't wait, especially because of all the optimism surrounding both my White Sox and the Marlins as well. After having successful off seasons and after seeing spring training, I think it's going to be a very fun baseball season, and it'll be something to get me through the rest of the semester. I'm just very excited. Just a lot of optimism for basically every team out there, unless you're like the Diamondbacks. So. It's gonna be a great year, and I can't wait.
Even with the Diamondbacks, they got that kid Mark Trumbo over there. Who's
I don't think Mark Trumbo's a kid.
He's not very old. He's still
like
a 29.
Young.
He's still a younger player. But got some marquee matchups, I believe, in my opinion. Marlins, of course, got Henderson Alvarez on the bump against Julio Teheran on Monday. The Cubs have John Lester facing Adam Wainwright. And the Nationals have Scherzer going against Bartolo Colon.
Bartolo Colon, yes.
And didn't you draft him in your fantasy
I did
team?
Draft him. I'm one of like the 1.4% of ESPN leagues who own Bartolo Colon. They don't know about history.
Those are National League matchups. The Tigers in the American League are taking on the Twins. They got Price in the bump against Hughes. And the Jake's White Sox taking on Kansas City Royals. Jess Samardzija against Ventura. So, how are you feeling about opening day? Let's get your opinion on White Sox opening day.
White Sox opening day, I'm just excited, you know? I mean, well, I don't think Jeff Samardzija... I'm inclined to dislike Jeff Samardzija.
As he came from the Cubs.
No, not even that. I do not like Notre Dame football. Growing up, I was a UCLA fan. UCLA-UM, I mean, eventually Northwestern. But when I was, like, really, really little,
wow.
I really liked UCLA.
You're really hopping around, aren't you?
I was hopping... Okay, who was I supposed to root for? Northwestern? I didn't even know what they were until I was, like, 7. And then eventually we got season tickets to them, and I started rooting for them.
There you go.
But before that, when I was younger, it was UM because my dad liked UM. And it was UCLA.
And your dad went to FIU.
There was no FIU football team when he went here, genius.
Plus,
they were never on. We lived in Chicago. How are we supposed to root? There was no streaming games online. You think we could have seen an FIU game? We would have had to fly to Miami to go see an FIU game. And my dad had never seen an FIU game in person. So, there you go.
The great ones make it happen. All right.
Anyway, Jeff Samardzija, he was a wide receiver for Notre Dame. I drove all the way to Indiana with my dad to see UCLA play Notre Dame. Jeff Samardzija got a game-winning touchdown. I never liked Jeff Samardzija from that moment on.
Played football, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, that was where it was coming in, you know. So, and then he was on the Cubs, so of course my dislike for him grew. And then he came to the White Sox. He might only be here for a year. He may leave. He didn't do well in spring. I don't know. Jeff Samardzija, whatever you want to say about him. Hopefully, he will have the shark cage going. That's a thing. Section 154 and 155 at U.S. Cellular Field will be the shark cage when he pitches. And so, you know, hopefully that he's able to be really a number two to Chris Sale like they hope. I mean, a lot of people saw him as an ace, especially when he was with the Cubs, so hopefully he can live up to that. I think the White Sox really solidified a lot of their needs, both in the rotation and in the bullpen. They got guys like David Robertson from the Yankees, Greg Jennings from the Marlins. So I think that's a team that they're pitching. They really solidified it. They have Jose Abreu, my pick for AL MVP this year. They have Adam Eaton, just signed a long-term extension. Avisail Garcia, they got Melky Cabrera, and so this is Adam LaRoche. This is a lineup, I think, that has a lot of power and a lot of speed in it, so I think it's just a great combination lineup, and they're pitching. You know, I'm just very optimistic, as you can tell, so I'm very excited to see what they can do, especially in that division. I mean, the Tigers just got the tough news that Justin Verlander will miss his first start, and that guy, he's been losing velocity for the last 4 years. The Royals, they lost James Shields, who was the ace of their rotation. They lost Billy Butler. That's a team that probably won't be as strong this year. And as, I don't know, this division, it seems like it's a lot more open. I think every team has a shot in it, but I don't think that there are teams who improved this offseason as much as the White Sox did.
Correction that I have to make. You said Greg Jennings. I believe you meant Dan Jennings.
Okay. Greg Jennings is a wide receiver. He used to play for the Packers.
And I do believe that you're being a little bit of a homer in saying that Jose Abreu will be the MVP.
He hit 519 in spring training.
I'm just saying.
He went 2-for-4 in his last game, and his numbers actually dropped because he was hitting so well.
So let's talk a little bit about my Marlins now. Now that we talked about your Sox.
Homer.
We've got Henderson Alvarez, as I say, on the bumper.
Is he your Cy Young pick? Who's Henderson Alvarez?
Henderson Alvarez was an all-star last year.
So was Jose Abreu.
He's a pitcher. Anyhow, he's facing Julio Teheran, who I drafted in my fantasy league.
I'm sorry.
And I believe I drafted Henderson Alvarez. I have both of these men on my fantasy team. But Henderson Alvarez will be taking the...
The Marlins win 10-9.
The Henderson Alvarez will be the ace for the Marlins until mid-season when Jose Fernandez comes back off of his surgery. The Marlins are looking pretty good after this offseason. They made a few moves, locked up a lot of talent. Ichiro Suzuki is the fourth outfielder for the Marlins as the young outfield, the 23, 24, and 25-year-old outfield of Christian Yelich, the Gold Glover, Marcelo Ozuna, the Gold Glove nominee, and Giancarlo Stanton, also a Gold Glove nominee, and almost hit 40 home runs last year. Had he not gone down with that injury, I believe he would have made it. He had 37 home runs prior to the face injury that he took, the Mike Fiers pitch to the face. And I have a great feeling about Giancarlo Stanton this year. I believe that he's going to have an all-time year, honestly. Not even because I'm a Marlins fan.
Oh, so me saying that Jose Abreu was my pick for the Cy Young is me being a homer, but you saying Giancarlo Stanton will have an all-time year is not you being a homer?
I believe that I'm...
Homer, I hardly know her.
You're not framing those. You're not setting those up right, man. You got to let me do... Regardless... I do believe there's just something about him coming off this injury and him getting this contract that has me feeling that he's going to have a great year. Jose Fernandez will only have half a season to work with, but I believe he'll be a great part of the Marlins going into the middle of the season, playoff push. Tough division that the Marlins play in with the Nationals. And the Nationals, of course, have five aces from what it seems in their rotation. It'll be a tough team for the Marlins to beat and to be ahead of in the standings, but we're hopeful here in Miami. Got a great team. D. Gordon now in the addition at second base. You've got third base is pretty much wide open as
of
right
now. What happened to Casey McGee?
Casey McGee was traded away.
I know. Why? Why'd they do that?
I don't recall right now, actually. I'll get that for us. But, no, I mean, the Marlins are... They've got a lot going forward. Adani Echevarria, who was also a shortstop.
What was his name?
Adani Echevarria.
I'll never let me say that name on the show because I will undoubtedly mess that up very badly.
They've got, I believe, obviously they've got Michael Morse at first. The rotation, as I believe, as of today, goes Henderson Alvarez, Jared Cozart.
Unless he gets kicked out of baseball.
AJ Ramos, Matt Latos, and Dan Heron. Oh, no. My mistake. It would go Henderson Alvarez, Jared Cozart, Matt Latos, Dan Heron, Tom Kohler. No.
You said Kohler was the five starter. You've said
Kohler's
that.
Kohler's the fifth. Regardless.
Yeah, either way.
I'm not sure if I'm going off of what I know or what I believe should be it, because I don't think that Kohler should be in the starting five.
Whoa! Hot take! Where's the air horn at, man?
I mean, I like Tom Kohler a lot, but the guy had a terrible spring and he hasn't been showing.
Well, in fairness, pictures, I know that this goes against what I said about Samardzija, but pitchers don't necessarily give their best stuff in spring. That's why you see a lot of scores like I saw a score one day, the Cubs won a game like 15-14 or something, and then the numbers on the bottom of the screen kept going, one team won 10-8, and it's just the batter is trying to give themselves, like, they give their all out there. They're trying to solidify the swing and their stance that they're going to be using, the approach that they're going to take. But the pitchers, they don't give their all in spring training. They don't give the hitters, they don't want to put that stress on their arm. They want to get their stuff down, but it's like they're throwing glorified bullpens in spring training games is essentially what it is.
I'm just very worried about, I mean, again, he would be the fifth starter.
So you don't think he should be?
I'm not confident in Kohler.
So
he had a good season.
Yes or no, should Kohler be in the Marlins starting rotation?
I know that's not what Brad Hand is built for, but I would rather see Brad Hand in the fifth spot than Tom Kohler.
Hot take alert right there from Lewis. He says, get Tom Kohler out of the starting rotation. Tom Kohler, if you're listening, I apologize.
Wow, he is, as it says here, it goes Alvarez, Latos, Kohler, Harry, Cozar. Kohler's the third starter. Oh, my God.
Does that bother you, Lewis?
Oh, a great deal.
So look, when Lewis and I will be, if anybody's listening and are big fans of the podcast, and they'll be at the Marlins game
next Saturday.
Well, nobody cares about opening day. Saturday.
Nobody cares about opening day. As we like to say with opening day, nobody cares about opening day. Opening day is one of the biggest events in
the
sports.
I agree. Everybody cares about opening day. Anyhow. But if you're one of the few people who continues to care after opening day, Lewis and I will be the Saturday game against the Rays. Jared Cozart will apparently be pitching, so come find us in left field, first row, section 30.
Goodness gracious, and at third base, Martin Prado looks like he'll have the nod, the opening day nod. Judge, oh my God.
Lewis is not happy. He's just finding this out on air. This is a live moment. This is radio at its finest right here. You have Lewis receiving bad news, apparently.
I believe it to be. And Jared Sotolamacchia is starting at catcher. I just wanted to make sure you guys...
There's some 2 Chainz for you as well.
I just wanted to make sure you guys knew what was going on. Wow.
Base guy. I don't know what to fill this with. You're just over here very upset about this Marlins situation.
So you're throwing in a little 2 Chainz and air horns. All right, let's talk a little bit about the Final Four. Let's finish this.
No, what was that? What was that transition? Come on. We were on a roll with baseball, and now you're all depressed, and now we're going to talk about the Final Four.
Not happy about this.
Kentucky's going to win. There's your Final Four talk. Let's go back to baseball.
No. Let's talk some Final Four. It's a big deal. It's a huge topic. Final Four. Kentucky takes on Wisconsin tomorrow night at 8:49. Duke takes on Michigan State at 6:09. Looks like it's the battle of the coaches. They're weird times, aren't they?
Yeah, just because they have to get the exact times. I don't know. It's weird. Why can't it be 6:10? 6:15.
Well, why don't you call them up, go to Indianapolis, and let them know how you feel.
The NCAA wouldn't listen to me. The NCAA is a very poorly run organization, as we all know.
Whoa, hot take?
I don't even think that's a hot take. I just think that's a fact right there.
Wow. We've got Coach Cal, the battle of the coaches against Wisconsin, and it just looks like the Kentucky team is just too good to lose. Although Frank Kaminsky, Frank the Tank, he quoted Michael Scott earlier this week in an interview, so that really gives him the edge over anybody else.
I agree with that.
He quoted Michael Scott from The Office, and anybody who can do that on air, really, he's just got the winner's mentality.
He does.
He's got the killer instinct with that. So we'll have to see how Kaminsky plays against Kentucky, because he would be a big part of the win, obviously, as he is still in the running for Player of the Year, isn't he?
I think so.
Fantastic.
I mean, the Wooden Award, ladies and gentlemen. I think he's up for that, yeah. Frank the Tank.
Coach K versus Coach Izzo. Duke against Michigan State. Duke has gone from... Go ahead.
Before you continue, do you think it would be safe to say that Frank Kaminsky Frank Kaminsky from Wisconsin. I don't even know where I'm taking this. Do you think it's safe to say that he wants Wisconsin fans to fear how much they love him?
What do you mean?
Oh my God! Never mind. You're on here saying, oh yeah, I think Wisconsin might win because of the Michael Scott reference, and then I threw out one of the most quotable things that Michael Scott ever said, and it just went over your head. So go on, talk about Michigan State and Duke, the matchup where whoever wins that is still going to lose.
I don't believe that to be true. I don't. Because Tom Izzo, as we've seen, is a great coach. He does a lot with nothing. He always does. His teams aren't that great. They don't shoot too well. And he manages to just to bring the best out in them.
They have that dude Valentine. He's pretty good.
And them boys, right? Valentine and them boys? Fantastic. Another great contribution with the air horn. Fantastic.
The air horn is the greatest invention of all time, actually. So,
back to the Kentucky-Wisconsin matchup.
I thought you were talking about Duke.
I'm going back to the Kentucky-Wisconsin matchup because he used, with that air horn, just threw us all off. But no, Wisconsin's a great team. They got Frank Kaminsky.
Nigel Hayes. I don't know anything about Nigel Hayes.
Fantastic.
If Bo Ryan is the coach.
No, the real combo here that Wisconsin has that is very formidable is Frank Kaminsky and Sam Decker. Decker's a junior, Kaminsky a senior. So
Decker, I hardly know her.
There it is.
Yeah. Oh, you took away my air horn.
I'm not giving you the air horn. I'm not letting you do that.
It's gone. That would have been the perfect time for the air horn.
It's terrible. Regardless.
You have the greatest assistant coach in college basketball in Lamont Paris.
And why is he the greatest assistant
coach? Yeah, Peg Cullen, the program assistant.
Your contributions are subpar. Wow.
Dude, you brought in college basketball. I know FIU college basketball, kind of.
Well,
that there's my contribution.
The Duke matchup against Michigan State. Duke team is pretty stacked with Jahlil Okafor and Marshall Plumlee, brother of Miles and Mason Plumlee, NBA players. They still got Sean Kelly, so he's hasn't been doing as much as he was last year. Wasn't as much of a standout this year as last year. But I guess we'll have to see.
We're going
to
see if Tom Izzo can make magic happen as he has been able to do the last 3 years. He brought a 7 seed to the Final Four, you know, I mean. I don't know. I think that it's a good matchup for them. I don't know if Duke is significantly better than Michigan State. Obviously, they have Coach K, who's one of the best coaches in the country, but so is Tom Izzo. So, you know, like I said, Michigan State, they have Valentine. They have a few key players who are going to be able to at least make it a game against Duke. Duke has guys like Justin Winslow, Jahlil Okafor. So I think that'll be a great matchup, though I don't know if I can see either of them knocking off Kentucky or Wisconsin, whoever ends up advancing from that side of the bracket.
My prediction is Duke beats Michigan State, Kentucky beats Wisconsin, and actually, I'm going to go, even though it's not that much of an upset, because these are all Final Four teams, I see Duke beating Kentucky.
That would have been the time for the air horn, regardless, since you took it away. I have Kentucky over Wisconsin, and the other side, you know, I think Michigan State's been on a roll. I don't want to pick 2 1-seeds against each other, so I'm just going to say Michigan State's. Again, I don't know a ton about the matchup. I know it's a great coaching matchup. There's a lot of talent on both sides of the floor. I like Michigan State, I guess, just because I don't want to pick a 1 seed against a 1 seed. But regardless of who comes out of that side, I think Kentucky will take it all.
I think what it is that Kentucky's had too many bad games. I mean, they've won all of them, obviously, but they've had a lot of bad games, and I just don't see them beating Duke.
Duke has had some bad games, though, and Duke has lost those bad games. Kentucky, say what you want, they've been able to find a way to win.
Yeah, a way to win in the SEC.
They doubled up West Virginia.
But they're from the SEC.
Virginia's not from the SEC.
No, I'm talking about Kentucky.
Oh, well, yeah. The SEC Duke is terrible in everything except football.
And baseball.
Yeah.
And,
FIU beat Tennessee in a series.
And Duke's coming from the ACC. It's a storied basketball conference. And I just have...
Really, how great is the ACC, though?
It's
this year, how great is it?
Really good. There were 6 teams in the final, or at least in the Sweet 16 from the ACC. Yeah, something like that.
Maybe
like
I'm thinking of the Big 12.
Regardless, but yeah. So I've got Duke. Who do you have?
I have Kentucky. And if we're talking college basketball, Miami lost yesterday in the NIT.
Yeah, which would have been great for Miami, kind of not really, if they would have won the NIT.
It would have been like a cool year, the best of the not good. So, you know, I mean, obviously
nice
we don't...
Nice pat on the back.
We don't talk much UM here because we're at FIU, the superior football school.
We try not to give them too much shine because
exactly.
we want to give
get
our brother the shine, you know?
That's hot take right here. That's what FIU needs to fix, man. People are walking around this school with UM shirts on. People are going to UM games from FIU. Come to FIU games, people. And go to Panthers games.
Support your teams, man.
Exactly.
You go to school here, you are a Panther... Be a Panther. You're
exactly.
not a Hurricane. I'm
even
sorry.
Even my father, who we mentioned before, he went here and there was no football team. He doesn't like basketball, but he went to some basketball games. And so he rooted for UM just because that was the team. But even now, he said right now, if FIU and UM were playing a game, he doesn't care about the situation. He's pulling for FIU, and he never even got to see this football team. So you can do it too, current Panthers. This team's right here. It's 5 minutes from the dorms, if that. Support your teams, people.
Pause up. Go
pause
Panthers.
Up. Hashtag pause up. Hashtag FIU game day. Hashtag FIU.
Hashtag world day. I think that's going to do it for us here today on the 305 Panther podcast. A bit of a shorter podcast. Sorry to any of you who are wanting some more content. We'll be back next week with some more. Obviously, of course, we're going to have the results from the Final Four, results from baseball, and results from everything. We're going to play the results, I guess.
Yeah, we'll have first-hand coverage of tonight's FIU football practice, so...
From the future beat writer here in Jake.
According to you.
All right, we'll talk to you guys next week.
All right, take it away, Will. Can y'all feel that? Can y'all feel that? Jig it out. Here I am in the place where I come let go. In Miami, the base and the sunset low. Every day like a Mardi Gras. Everybody.